I did not expect to be here. This is alarming.
My attention should be solely focused upon the earthly planar dream space.
This should not be possible.
Did you bring me here? Please, reverse what you have done.
I need to keep Relic safe.
Listen to all the events that must now happen. Do it carefully and record
appropriately. Then stay a bit longer afterward.
And ensure that we do not fail.
Hello?
What time is it? Who is it?
I don't know.
Situation. Green. Welcome back.
Sorry, love. I have to take this.
Paris, you walk towards the other open door, ignoring completely Tiberius, who's somehow aware of the other life that keeps battering against your memories. And you find yourself in what looks like a fairly large and clean bathroom, clean tiled floor. It's got a few stalls in here and a few urinals. You look around and you can see that, honestly, it's way cleaner than you would ever expect a place like this. You scan for anything that looks interesting, but not finding it, you decide to leave.
All right. So I found a very clean bathroom. Was there anyone in the bathroom? Can I search for someone to see, make sure there's nobody in there?
Absolutely. You do the quick peer under the stall type of thing from afar. You don't see any feet, but you're welcome to go stall by stall because all three of the stalls are closed.
Yeah, he goes stall by stall.
Tell me how you do this. Describe your actions, please.
He just pushes open the door from each one, front to back.
Got it. Do you have your gun raised?
Do, yes.
Is there anything else I need to know about your stance, demeanor, or...
Yeah,
I know you're covered with blood, so that's already on the...
His mindset is... So just, you know, my mindset right now with Frankfurt is he's trying to get people out of the building. So he's like checking to see if there's anybody else still in the building. Now that I have not found the... security, that there's nowhere the security, or at least I haven't found it yet. I've got other plans, so just checking.
You open the first stall, there's no one there. You move to the second, and when you open it up, you see squatting on top of the lidded toilet seat is a man in a white clean room suit with the hood pulled down. He has a dirty brown scraggly beard, grayish blue eyes. He looks like maybe he's in his mid-30s. His hair is pulled back in a bun, and it's covered with a net. And he looks up at you, and he screams when he sees you, bowing his head immediately, and puts his hands up in this kind of squatted position. And he screams, "Please, man, please, don't hurt me."
The names on this list?
Oh, God, please.
Hey.
Please, don't hurt me.
Hey, man, just quick question. Names on this list mean anything to you? What's this about? I just kind of hold the page up.
I don't know what that is, man. I don't know what that is. Please. Please, I've got three kids. I've got three kids. My wife is waiting for me at home. I only have 2 hours left on this shift, man.
I'm going to roll human real quick. See if I can get anything.
Check.
Oh, 11. Critical success.
Cool. That's nice. You've dealt with people who are in the utter grasp of fear, where they are so pants-wettingly frightened that they are in this heightened state where they're just almost shaking like a rabbit. And there are two things that you feel about this. One, familiarity. You've put people in this position on the job and off the job many times. So you've been here before. this is a very common sort of lizard brain level that you've engaged in this human being by appearing before him in this fashion. Two, it sickens you a bit.
Hey, is there a broom here with the where security camera footage goes? Recording systems, that kind of thing?
I don't know. If it's anywhere, there's like a locked room. There's like a locked room on the other side. Like, it's behind like some chain link fence, and there's like, I think there's like a generator back there and some stuff to get the ventilation working. I think there's like servers too.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. Hey, all right, tell you what. If anybody asks, you never saw me, right?
No.
Hey.
I didn't see you.
You never saw me, right?
I never saw you. Please. Please don't hurt me. I swear to me. I swear I didn't see you. I didn't see you. Oh, God, please.
That's three times. You swore. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Get the fuck out of here, man.
So do you kind of move out of the way of the stall entrance? He jumps off of the toilet seat, slips a bit on the slick bathroom tile, and runs out of the bathroom. He's sobbing as he goes.
I check the last stall.
This one's out of order, but there's no one in it.
In that case, Frankfurt is going to... So he described a room behind a locked room behind a chain link fence with potentially some servers in it. And did he make that sound like it was in the warehouse or was that outside the warehouse?
You think back to his half screaming, half sobbing mishmash of words. And it sounded like it's outside, maybe in an outbuilding or a shed or something that's not accessible through the main production warehouse.
All right, well, I'm going to go hunting for that.
You can either exit the warehouse production floor through the open roll top or any of the closed roll tops too, or go back through the abattoir of blood that is the front office.
I recall, I think back to when I walked up to the door the first time before everything went to shit. And do I recall seeing a small shed that matches the description that he just gave me?
No, but he did mention behind the warehouse, so you wouldn't have seen it. If it exists.
I'll exit out the other side then, assuming that it's on the other side of the building.
So that's the roll top?
Yeah.
So you go ahead and kind of crouch down a bit and open the roll top a bit more to allow for your large form to make its way through, and you jump down to the asphalt below. You look across the parking lot as you do so, and you see that Tiberius is on the ground in front of the FBI requisition vehicle. And you see Ryan has his phone out. He looks to be making a call.
Do they see me?
They have shown no indication that they see you. Again, Tiberius is like on the ground. He's staring straight up at like the sky. He might be hurt. You're not sure. He's on the ground, so he's probably hurt. Ryan he's kind of pacing back and forth as he talks on the phone. He hasn't spotted you just yet.
Frankfurt looks at him for a moment, kind of confused look in his eyes, squints, and then shrugs and turns around and starts heading towards the back of the building.
Ryan, if you could throw down a luck for me, please.
82.
So good at luck today, Ryan.
I know. Really bad luck. At least I'm alive.
You happen to be pacing away from the direction of the warehouse on your phone call when Paris Frankfurt darts around to the back of the building out of view. So you have no idea that that has occurred. Chloe picks up the phone within one ring.
Mr. Malik, I couldn't follow. There's only one route up to that building, and they would see me. I've been trying to text you. I'm up near the exit to that road. Do you need me?
Yeah, the coast is clear. Everyone seems to have cleared out. I need your help. Get down here.
There's a van that just turned down the road. It's that carpet care van. It's headed your way.
Okay, stay there. We'll come to you.
Okay.
She hangs up.
I am going to head for the driver's door while saying, get up. We got to get going. We need to get out of here. Get in the car. But like not waiting for him. So however long it takes me to get in, turn on the car, and then pull away. If he is still on the ground, then...
Totally understand. So you've committed to this action. Tiberius, what would you like to do?
Tiberius is not going to want to leave Prentice.
Prentice is definitely in the car that's leaving with Ryan.
Okay, I'll crawl in the car.
Are you going to get in the passenger seat? Or are you going to get into the back seat with the body of Prentice?
The back seat with the body. I want to check what's the damage.
The engine starts up and Ryan quickly throws it in reverse, turns to the front of the vehicle to the exit of the parking lot. And you're soon making your way back out on this gravel road towards the interstate. Paris, you walk along the side of the building until you can see the the back of this rectangular box. And lo and behold, there is a chain link fence area back here. There's a picnic bench behind it. Looks like maybe that's where folks take their lunch or smoke breaks. There is a small shed there with a padlock on the front. There's no razor wire or barbed wire on the top of the chain link fence, but the door to it, like this little enclosure, is wide open. So doesn't matter anyway. So as you walk towards it, you come up to the shed. It's made out of concrete and corrugated steel. Look it over. You can hear humming from within, and you do see power and data wires that are running from the building itself, the main building, into the shed.
I look to see, you said the door was wide open when I came up. I remember you saying there were three people working in the warehouse, and I found it. So he shouts out, is anybody in there?
So, sorry, I did a bad job describing. So it's like an outside enclosure. There's no roof or anything. So it's like, there's other stuff back here. There's like a dumpster, there's old materials, but it's a place that you could kind of close up for the night if you wanted to. But right now the chain link fence to this fenced enclosed area is open.
Oh, okay.
So you can see 100%. There's nobody there. You just have that outbuilding. It's a very small shed. I'm talking 10 by 12 that has a padlock on its door.
Oh, okay. So I walk over to the shed.
So you take a look at this. It's a very basic blue labeled master lock that's on the shed's door.
I look around real quick for anything to pry it. To maybe pry it off or break it? Or do I think, looking at the door, do I think I could just kick through it?
It's possible. The door isn't wooden. It's looks like a heavy, almost fire door. The frame itself is not wooden either. It's aluminum or steel or both. So yeah, that's, you know, it might be tough, but the latch for the door attached to the frame is on the outside. There are large bolts that go into this steel frame and steel door, but that is right there.
I look around to see if there's any like length of metal or anything I could potentially use to pry and break the padlock.
Yeah, there might be. Let's go ahead and roll a luck. There are a lot of old materials, maybe building materials out here, stacked up, oxidized from the weather.
Well, I failed. 76 out of 50.
There's some really old orange rebar that looks pretty brittle, but that's about it.
This is one of those things where I forget if this is like a movie cliche or not. Can I shoot the lock off? is that a thing you only can do in movies?
Yeah, it's a movie cliche.
You can try, my friend, but it doesn't work. That's...
Gotcha.
As like, since that is your specialty within your unit, you would know that that would never work. That's why you have breaching rounds.
That was my assumption. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And do I have my breaching rounds with me?
They might be back at the car, actually, because y'all have everything in the car. So yeah, you do. You have all your gear in the FBI requisition vehicle.
Well, you know what? Let's fucking throw a boot into this door and see what happens.
Hell yeah, man.
You should probably kick it instead.
Oh, got him.
That's right.
Got him good, man.
All right, it's actually a strength minus 20%.
So I need to... Oh, it's a 50-50 then.
That's pretty good. You're a strong fella.
I'm just going to roll luck, if that's okay. Same.
No, thing. Roll strength. I like to see STR times 5.
Okay, how
do I... Yeah, it gets his dick hard.
You right-click and it allows you to...
There we go. Yeah. Hey! Oh!
Wow.
A second critical success. Wow. 11
Same number,
out of
too.
50. Same number.
You raise your booted foot and smiling as you see the blood already drying under the sun. You smash it forward as hard as you can where the lock brace meets the frame, and it flies open, slamming against some structure inside the dark shed. The brace and the lock are now dangling loudly, slowly moving from side to side and coming to a stop.
So Chris, what song is playing? Is it Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, or...
It's whatever I can get rights to.
Oh, sick.
Well, so probably
that
probably something can... Steamboat really related.
The ice cream song is pretty sick. You know, I like that one.
It's good. It's a good one.
Okay, so Paris, to the sound of Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence, walks his way into the room.
Inside the room, you see what looks like a large water filter unit. Two tanks, multi-stage filters, and it's humming along with a fairly big pump that's sitting on the ground. You also see what looks like within a small cabinet that has a wire front so you can see what's inside of it. Blinking lights, a telltale sign of servers, perhaps, computer equipment. It's not your specialty, but you've seen that sort of thing before and had to maybe grab some before for somebody else. And you look around and you can see that data cables are running into that conglomeration of equipment. It's very likely that this is where any hard copies of the footage in the CCTV system are stored.
I look around for anything that can burn. I am a demolitions expert in theory, so I'm gonna hunt around.
Nothing in this room. I can't think of anything. I'm trying to think of what might work, but it's all basically metal. Now, if you have an accelerant that you can add to things, you can certainly scorch the shit out of it. But there's electrical conduit running into the filter and pump system. There's electrical conduit running into the computer equipment, as well as data cables, as I mentioned. I don't have anything more for you, but if you can do something with that, you know, go for it.
So in my head, I'm debating, like, is there a way I can either grab one of the water lines and just spray everything down so it shorts out? Is there like a hose or something I could rip from the water pump, water filtration system?
Yeah, you're not super familiar with filtration equipment, but it looks like you could rip some of these hoses out and see what happens.
Let's do it. Let's go for it.
Do you have any operate heavy machinery?
I have a 10.
Yeah, so you're not familiar with any of this stuff at all. So you start yanking at these hoses, going ham on this machine. You hear some grinding and whining as you pull and yank at these hoses. They're made out of some sort of pretty intense PVC or PEX or something. But one finally breaks out of what looks like a step clamp and begins shooting water at a pretty high pressure all over the floor and wall as you struggle to kind of take control of it. You get it, no problem. And it's now just kind of at a very, very thin, high pressure stream splashing wherever you want it to. You hear some whining and grinding now though from the pump itself, and it sounds like it's really heaving and having some problems. It's starting to get very loud here as metal is grinding against metal. And you can also hear something like somebody dropping bags of marbles against concrete from inside the pump.
Uh-oh.
I aim it at the servers and soak them down.
Yeah, you start soaking down the servers and the lights continue to flash, but they definitely are, some of them are going off. Some of them are starting to go pretty nuts. One just goes black. One, what looks like maybe a server array or something, just goes black. You really soak the shit out of them until pretty much all the lights are either dim, sad looking, or off. The pump now is making really loud heaving noises, and you don't see smoke, but you can smell what sounds like burning.
Paris looks around Paris surveys the scene, gives a calm, satisfied nod, and walks out.
And Mr. Self-Destruct by Nine Inch Nails starts playing.
Yes.
That's the song, right?
So absolutely. since again, I can't get that, it will have to be the ice cream song again, but okay. I'll put some guitar to it. You walk away from the open door of the shed and leave the heaving sound of the sickly pump in your rear view.
Putting your sunglasses on as a little smoke pours out of the building.
Frankfurt's going to head towards where he thinks the van is.
It is, I don't believe it's a van got,
SUV.
But, it is. SUV. Yeah, it's an SUV.
Heads to where the SUV, where they park the car, where they park the car.
Pack the car.
Where that is.
Ryan, you are driving. I don't want to editorialize. I was going to say barreling, but you're driving back out the way you came to biotech. And as you do so, you can clearly see, again, this is a open area where you can see oncoming traffic from nearly a mile away. It's a flat area as well. You see a white van coming towards you.
I mean, is it coming towards me in my lane, or am I about to drive past it?
It's really there's no lanes, but it is on the right side of this road as much as it can be. It's barely wide enough for two vehicles.
No, I'm going to ignore it and tell Tiberius, look up a hotel, look up somewhere cheap. We need to lay low.
Tiberius, you are looking over the body of Prentice in the back seat, and you roll your first aid.
I do and will.
Your submission is noted.
31 out of 10, failure.
Check that first aid for me.
Nice.
You don't need to be an expert to see that this is a corpse. It's not breathing. His face is paler than alabaster. There is a gaping hole in his chest. You can see obscene shapes within it. Makes you sick. Seeing somebody like this reduced to just meat. You close your eyes tightly and remember coming across the ripped up body of a guinea hen once during a bird watching venture. And you start to feel nausea as you remember getting closer to it. You weren't sure what it was. And you just saw that some fox or some other animal had just ripped it to shreds as almost like for fun, strewing its viscera across a log and stones nearby. Like it was not hungry, but just wanted to be cruel. You open your eyes again. And this reminds you of that It's like somebody took his body and just destroyed it for fun. There's no life. There's no Prentice. There's no Finster.
Tiberius will sit in the backseat, put on his seatbelt, and pull out his cell phone and start staring at it.
There's a wave of anxiety first. It's all too familiar. Gives way to relief as you look at the readouts and watch the stillness of the water. And you breathe. You breathe. I need everyone but Eric to please move to a different channel momentarily.
Oh.
Y'all can go to one of the public channels and just hang out there, but I need to talk to Eric.
Let's do a public channel, guys.
Alone at last.
Are you there? Alone at last. Okay. So you have some choices to make as a player now. So we're going to go a little meta. You have been an unwilling participant in a very potent ritual that is going to connect Prentice now to the Glaukeen, and he is going to have a transformation that will reduce his sanity to zero. It will also give him very peculiar motivations, and you are indebted, I would say, to certain things that you typically would not bother with. So your motivations are tied heavily to a feeling of being indebted. Hmm. So there are two options. One, I can be this Prentice, this zero sanity Prentice who has a new lease on life in so many ways, or you can continue to pilot this particular character. However, this means it will be a very different experience. Now, it could be very fun. I talked to Dee about this quite a bit, and I wanted to make sure I offered this to you before we considered bringing you to a different Delta Green agent. So it's up to you completely. I don't know how long this version of Prentice will last in this form, but it could be really fun to do for as long as it does last.
Well, I've never been given the opportunity to play a zero sanity character, and I think that would be really fun.
I think so too. So let's talk about what that looks like. This brings Prentice back to the peak of who he was. At his most ambitious, full of hubris, he is going to be the picture of health and mental fortitude.
Okay.
So that's number one. What happens, we will narrate in character in just a moment, but that's going to be kind of where he is at. So
right.
He's Prentice
hubris
at his best. Yeah, he's Prentice at his best and he's Finster at his best, but those two things no longer bother him in his head. It makes sense to him now why they're both in his head. He doesn't have an answer he could articulate, but it doesn't bother him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For the sake of the overarching narrative, he can still be Prentice or Finster depending on how he feels, but he usually just feels like Prentice.
Sounds good to me.
Motivation one, you are aware that the world is really a ball of yarn. This is what makes sense to Prentice. And there is somebody slowly tugging at the thread that will unravel this ball. And once that thread has been completely tugged away, what will be revealed inside is utter bliss. Just all the world's troubles can be gone with the snap of a finger. And the thing is, it's inevitable and it's going to happen. And you have been given the opportunity to speed this along. There is, again, a divine hand that is taking away the confusion, the hatred, the conflict, the horror, the despair, the unknown, pull by pull. And it's already made great strides. And it wants you to assist. And you are filled with absolute, absolute devotion. You are so flattered that you've been chosen to the point of feeling almost worshipful towards this divine entity. This being, this thing that you, it's just so easy for you to call it Lord. And it speaks to you across eons. It speaks to you across leagues, as if under great depths of water, as if all around you, as if hugging you, and it loves you. You feel waves of love. It tells you there will be no more pain. It tells you you will be given a gift. It tells you you have been baptized in its own glory to serve it towards this grand purpose of saving everyone from the conflict that is life.
Well, this is exactly the Prentice that everybody needs.
I agree. And so as you have this experience, body is formless and shapeless, but you feel these things, you know these things, and it tells you it's going to make you strong. It's going to make you special. It tells you that you will need to avoid the sunlight and that you will do your best work under
cover of dark,
an overcast day or the cover of dark. But otherwise you will be stronger and faster and more capable because you are the chosen. You're the chosen. And these are all things that you hear and you accept. And the final thing your Lord tells you is that the one who has brought you to him, the one who has done this to bring you into his arms, into his love, is also one of the chosen. But he has not yet taken the step that you have. That being said, his time will come, and you are to support him in his endeavors to bring others into the embrace. That is what you are being asked. Listen to him well. Listen to him well. And when the time comes, your Lord wants you to be the one to embrace Ryan in turn.
Dope. I can do that. My body is ready.
What is going to happen is you will awake in the back of this vehicle next to a somber and despondent Tiberius, and you will see that the blood has drained from his face, and you will see that he is in a state of distraction from grief. It's clear as day. It's one of those confusing human things that you're helping your Lord pull away, and you're going to put your hand on his hand and smile. That will be your first act as a new being, one of comfort to a friend. Now,
I'm excited.
Let's go back to Meta. Do you have any questions? This is a weird transition. So, any questions at all? Let me answer.
No, I'm so ready to get into it.
Okay.
I can't wait to freak him out.
At its very base, Ryan is your boss, but the big boss is talking to you through your mind, and I will probably be DMing you weird things from him. I kind of like that actually for the audience to hear. So I'll probably have to do something like this and consolidate those messages, but we'll see how it works. I've never done this before. But anyway, Ryan's your boss for now. But if Ryan ever goes against your Lord, you get rid of Ryan. That, you know that, like in your core. Mm-hmm. Oh, one other thing, you know anyone else like you, and you know where they are when they're close by. And you know that Ryan has another chosen nearby. You just feel it. You also feel great love. So anytime you are close to one of your own, it's like this beam, it's like saintly beaming from across miles. Mm-hmm. You just feel their love.
Beautiful.
Any questions? One more time.
When can we start?
All right, we're going to jump back to that scene. I'll try to narrate you into it.
Okay.
So we're coming back to you now, Tiberius, as you continue to stare at your phone and you watch as his eyes open, your heart flutters, and you just feel the back of your neck prickling. And you watch as he looks up directly at the camera, and you see him shaking his head and mouthing the word no over and over again. And you're not sure what to do. Do you talk back? Do you say something? You can't listen. You don't have any headphones. You're struggling to figure out what to do. And as you try to think through what's happening here, something that has never happened before, you feel a hand on your hand.
What's wrong, bud?
I look over and I scream.
Paris, you round to the front of the warehouse, and as you do, it's clear almost immediately that the FBI requisition vehicle is gone. You're not sure how you feel about that. What would you like to do?
Frankfurt looks around and sees, can Frankfurt see the car at all, or is it just gone? Everything's empty?
It is an empty parking lot. That is correct.
Frankfurt looks down at himself to do a quick blood check. How much blood would you say is he covered in on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 being, you know, I cut my finger, and 10 being I just, you know,
in Paris's expert opinion as a professional blood waiter, he's at like a pretty good like 8 right now.
Awesome. All right. So he was like a wallflower at that opening scene in Blade. So just caught a little bit of splash. Got it.
He got a good amount of splash. He was point blank for a headshot that caused a bunch of spray over his face, neck, and most of the right side of his body where he was positioned. Then he kind of like really got in there, and then he did a bunch of stomping, or not a bunch of stomping, but a good stomp. So some of this is Turner's blood, but as he's kind of doing the self-inventory, he realizes he's got this ice hot pain in his shoulder, and he looks over and fuck, he got shot. That's right. Blood is welling down that shoulder, across his chest, down his pant leg, and leaving a pretty clear trail behind him that, wow, It's a lot of blood he's lost, he thinks to himself.
Fuck.
Chris, would you describe that trail as followable?
Highly.
And his first aid is garbage.
You better drink up that blood, dude. You can't run.
You gotta keep your blood in your
body.
Lap it up.
I am gonna attempt to see. You know, looking at the wound, I'm gonna kind of pull, try to get a clear view of the wound in my at the skin level. And
yeah, you pull down your shirt and your coat, and you take a look at it, and as you do, blood pours out of what looks like a perfect, like, not even jagged entry wound. You imagine that if you could get a look at your back, you'd be able to tell if it went all the way through or not. If it was low caliber, which didn't appear to be based off of how that skull ended up, but if it was low caliber, it might still be in you after having bounced around, or it might have gone clean through.
Fuck. Okay. I'd like to roll, I guess, first aid, take a crack at it. Maybe there's some sort of field first aid training he can recall.
Absolutely.
What about human?
To this fit. I'm definitely feeling pain from this gunshot.
You think, you perceive that.
Wait,
you are.
Wait till you roll.
Pain.
You don't know.
Oh, nice.
69 out of 11, so I failed.
It is nice. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and check your first aid.
Totally gonna get a chance to level that up. Yeah. Okay, so
you recall wanting some of your training when it comes to field dressing wounds, and it's something that you've always had folks kind of administer for you. The basic training is kind of not what you focus on when it comes to combat medicine, but maybe cauterize it with something, maybe suture it if you've got a suture kit. Maybe there's a first aid kit somewhere in the warehouse. But you're kind of worried that if there's like something in there, like, do you know you're not like always supposed to take the bullet out if it does more damage to take it out? And all these things are going, all these little facts are just kind of flying through your head. You're not really sure what to do.
Well, before he does anything else, he says, he thinks to himself, all right, I need to get this information over to the rest of the team. And he pulls out that piece of paper and his phone, both text a picture of the page and then write the two names on it and text that to
Well, there are a couple dozen names. You mean the top two names?
Just top two names. Stoltz, yeah. So he takes a picture of the top Aguilar. Two names. Yeah, and then text the two names to Fletcher.
Gotcha. Do you also text like the address of Amber Aguilar or any other information? I guess it doesn't matter.
He takes a photo. Sends him a picture of the actual. Yeah. Yes, just to make sure at least the name gets through. And then once he's done that, he's going to go back in the warehouse and look for a first aid kit.
You go ahead and haul yourself back up. This time it's a lot harder to pull yourself up because of the increasing pain in your shoulder that you're becoming more and more aware of. But you manage and kind of roll over a bloody smear left behind and stand back up on the production floor. Ryan, this van is coming straight towards you now. It's definitely making an effort to move over and make room for you. It slows down quite a bit as it does so. What would you like to do?
I'd like to drive past it and also yell back at Tiberius behind me. Hey, how are we coming with that hotel? Where are we going? You got one?
Was this question coming before or after I screamed at the top of my lungs?
At that exact moment, there is a loud man scream from the seat behind you, nearly deafening you, Ryan. I'm not sure like how Tiberius screams, but I think it would be like a protracted one, like a long scream maybe, not like a short scream.
Yeah, like a Hank Hill.
Nice. Oh. Okay.
Damn it, Bobby.
So that loud scream, this long, desperate and frightened scream is the response to your query, Ryan.
Jesus, fuck. What?
Oh, I think I scared him a bit.
Ah.
Sorry, Tiberius. I mean, Felix, whoever you want to be called. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you sad or scared, but if you could get that hotel, that'd be great.
Chris, what is this? What does this flesh look like? Is there a hole still?
You look over at the body that this voice is coming from, and Prentice has sat up, his legs unmoving, but his torso moving just fine, and his hand remains on your hand as you scream, now dragging this yell to a hoarseness that continues as all the air finally leaves your lungs. You look at him in disbelief, the large gaping hole in his chest, more obvious than ever, blood spattered against his chin, his face, all over his upper body, in fact. Dry now. Nothing slick anymore. He stares at you with something that it feels like not pity, but maybe empathy? You're not sure, but he seems like he cares about you. And this frightens you even more.
Tiberius will yell, "Stop this goddamn car right now! Just let me out!"
It's okay.
At this exact moment, Ryan, you're passing the van. And you see the men inside it have come to a stop. The driver has a phone out and is obviously filming your vehicle as it passes by. There's another man in the passenger seat. Go ahead and roll your criminology, please.
That was a success. 54 out of a target, 65.
As you pass by, you can see that the man in the passenger seat is heavily tattooed. You spot what looks like a black sun on his neck, very clearly part of some sort of white supremacist gang, maybe the New Aryan Empire. You'd have to see more, stay around longer to really figure out exactly what organization you might be affiliated with, but looks like he has a pretty clear affiliation with something.
So I recognize the tattoo as part of the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then carry on.
You nod what? With utter respect and carry on.
Mm-hmm.
What?
What? No, so I guess I clock it, but my attention right now is more on getting out of Dodge, getting to Chloe, mm-hmm. and getting to a kind of discreet place.
You drive by, continuing down your way, and glance up at your rearview mirror. You can see that Prentice is sitting up. You can also see Tiberius is very, very firmly insisting that you stop the car and let him out.
I am also pressed very far into the door, like as far away from.
You see that the van as well in the rear view begins to start up again and continue to head back toward the warehouse.
Question, Chris, does Ryan feel any sort of like exhilaration as Prentice comes to?
You feel bliss. And it's that level of bliss that you didn't think existed in the world before. No, way better than that. You didn't know this level of contentment and bliss existed in the world before your experiences recently, your experiences as Fletcher. And you smile to yourself as things come into clear focus, things come into a place where they should be. And you smile to yourself and you feel the presence. The presence is gleeful. It is full of joy, and that in turn fills you with joy.
Great.
Tiberius, everything's going to be okay. Look at me. I'm good. Whatever Ryan did, it worked. Tiberius, it's gonna be fine.
Just stop talking. Dude, stop talking.
It's okay. We've gotta finish the mission. Find us a hotel.
Ryan's gonna also take out his phone and call Chloe.
It only rings once.
Yes. Yes, you did it, Mr. Malik.
Yes, and I think we have another. Where are you?
I know. I can feel him.
She says. Tiberius, she's so loud on the phone that you can hear this woman saying this. It almost digitally clips out.
Tell me where you are.
I'm still at the interchange that turns onto the county road that you're driving up. I can feel you approaching. I can feel him, the newborn.
I can't wait for you to meet him.
Can't wait either.
I've asked our friend to locate a hotel for us, but just stay on the side of the road. I'll come to you there.
Okay, I will.
And then I just keep driving, keep an eye out for Chloe.
Tiberius, what are you up to?
I'm going to find a hotel in a downtown of local area.
Where are we? We're in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So back towards the city center, there is a Fayetteville hotel. Looks like it's an older, more expensive kind of historical hotel, but there are also motels around as well. It's a small town, so there's not too much to offer, but plenty of lodging. Just depends on which lodging you'd prefer.
Yeah, let's do a motel. Not in the outskirts, but like somewhere like industrial. Maybe with something with HBO. I just started watching The Sopranos. I know I'm late, but like,
I still
feel like your anniversary is a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah.
This is a Motel 6, and it's on the way back in. It's fairly close to getting back in or going back towards Russellville.
I will put on the directions with the lady talking, and I'm just going to put the phone up, and I'm not going to say a word.
Thank you, Tiberius.
Do you look over at Prentice?
Absolutely not.
Finster?
All right, I make zero effort to look anywhere but straightforward.
Prentice, you realize that your body is just not in a good spot to be seen publicly.
Right. I was actually going to say he's going to look for his suitcase in the back and find a nice change of clothes. And maybe
you start digging through that and you didn't notice it before, but there is an igloo cooler back there and your hand hovers over it for a second and you know it's not yours, but you feel that there's something special about that cooler.
Sure. Let's have a little peek.
You go ahead and as you're getting your clothes, you just open it up. It doesn't have a lock or anything on it. It just slides open. And inside, you can see what looks like maybe 13, 14 small globes of flesh that are sitting on a blanket.
Hmm. And I feel nothing looking at them or what?
You feel reverence and contentment.
Nice. Closes it and continues looking.
You go ahead and find your suitcase and you bring it out and you get a clean pair of clothes of your choice.
All right. He's going to put on as much concealing clothing as he can because he doesn't really want to be seen with the mess he has. He's going to try to wipe off what he can with the old dirty clothes.
Each time that you move around and your hand or arm catches some of the sunlight, you feel an unpleasant tingling. As time goes on, as you're changing your clothes, it moves to not just unpleasant, to a little painful.
He's going to do everything he can to avoid that feeling then. Put on a blazer so that he can hike that up over his head if he needs to go out.
Ryan, you finally exit this long county road. There's Chloe's rental car. And you see her there. She's got a hoodie on, giant sunglasses. And she waves, looking out over her dash as you emerge.
I'm going to roll down my window, say, follow me, and then continue on.
Of course, Mr. Malik. And you all, of course, hear that in the vehicle. For those who have never seen her before, you see, looks like a young, slight woman. Again, her hoodie is drawn tight. She's got sunglasses on, but you can see strands of red hair pouring out from behind the hoodie. She looks pale, but quite comely. She seems exuberant to see Ryan. She follows your vehicle as he continues.
And I am going to follow the instructions to the Motel 6.
Paris, you make your way back to the warehouse bathroom and you find that there is a first aid kit right there next to the door. You take it off and set it out and start looking through it on the sink, one of the large three basin sink areas in this worker's bathroom. What are you thinking about doing?
Well, I feel like first aiding the shit out of this gunshot wound.
You go ahead and...
I failed already.
Correct. So you go ahead and take some gauze and you kind of shove it into the hole that you can see. You turn around and you look and you can see an exit wound. So that brings you some pleasure, some relief. But unfortunately, that exit wound is huge. You gulp hard as you see that there's just a large amount of meat back there that is gone, and it is gruesome. So you do your best to pack that all with gauze too and wrap some more bandages around it, over your shoulder and around your arm and lat to try to hold that gauze in place. But it's going to bleed through pretty quick. That is a big crater back there. You're going to need to see a hospital or a doctor or a vet or something. Somebody needs to put something in there that better than a bunch of gauze, you think to yourself.
Well, that's awesome. Like, how do you even? I mean, I already came into this session assuming I wasn't going to be seeing Paris again from, you know, in the future. But let's try it. We're gonna try to stay in this. Okay, so Paris has shoved a buttload of gauze into a crater in his back and has not stopped the bleeding, but he feels a little better. And then he is going to Frankfurt is going to head out to the parking lot. There were not any other cars. He's already seen that, so he already knows there's no other cars. How long of a drive was it from the warehouse to the main road?
Good question. Looks like about 40 minutes. Oh, the main road. No, that was only like a 12-minute drive.
12-minute drive. That's still a crazy long walk. Okay, he wouldn't be able to walk that. He is going to... He's also completely unaware of the approaching van, so...
That's correct.
He also knows that's the only way in and the only way out, so if a bunch of people already left...
And he knows there's no other cars at the place, so all the other cars are gone. How did the duty that he put a bolt through his head, how did he get there? He had to get there somehow.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's going to go check for keys on that guy, see if he's got like some sort of transportation that might be... There's a motorcycle park somewhere.
A teleporting wand.
Yeah, you go ahead and go back to the body. You look down and go ahead and stick your hands in his pockets. You do find a wallet. You do also find some hard candies. You do find some keys, but not car keys. Not sure what they're for. And you hear a car outside park in the parking lot in front of, very close to the office, but in front of the office.
So Frankfurt is going to grab his gun and try to get a spot. He's going to try to find a spot in the room where he could ambush whoever's about to walk through that door, if they are.
Sure, you can. Yeah, if you want to have like a little bit of maybe visual cover, you could sidle your way behind one of the shelves in this small room and prop your gun up on the shelf after moving one of the bags of powder out of the way and have your gun aimed diagonally lengthwise through this long rectangular room towards the entrance, if that's what you'd like.
That's what I'll do.
You prop up there for about 5 minutes. You don't hear voices. You don't hear doors open from whatever just parked outside. You don't hear much of anything, not even music playing from the vehicle. The engine's been shut off. Otherwise, no one's leaving the car. They're just sitting there.
Frankfurt's going to try to sneak back, not the door right there, but try to go back through the warehouse and try to come around to the back of the car, around from the behind the warehouse. Does that make sense, what I just said?
The only other exit you know of is the roll-top door, which is unfortunately leads into the parking lot just on the other end of it, which is the front of the building. The back of the building, you had to walk around from that roll-top all the way around the building to get there.
Oh, okay. So there's no way to get into the... Like, if they're on one side of the building, there's no way to exit the other side of the building.
None that you have found yet. You have not run across anything that gets you right to the back.
All right, well, I'm going to go look for that then. Or sorry, Frankfurt's going to move out of the office into the warehouse and try to find a way to get out into the parking lot that would not put him directly inside of the car, or have them be able to see him. The idea is he's trying to find a way to kind of sneak up on the car without being seen.
Roll your search, please.
Failure, 37 out of 27.
You do see that there's a extendable ladder on one side of the production floor nearest the roll tops, and there are skylights.
Time for another climb.
Of climbing right now?
Are you capable of climbing?
Yeah, because the massive...
Is climbing harder? Yes.
Hold on. Is it possible? No.
Maybe.
Not going to do it. Nope.
You're not going to fall for my climbing trick?
Fuck no. No, not again.
I designed this climbing puzzle for you, John. I've been waiting for you to engage it this whole time.
Somewhere in the back of those weird memories from that other life, he recalls sickening thuds and slamming on the ground. No, not going to do it. All right. So is there, just help me here. Is there any way that Frankfurt could think of to get out of this building without being seen by the car that he's aware of? I haven't found anything like that.
If he can get up maybe through one of those skylights, if they open, which he can't really see from down here on the floor, he could maybe get up on the roof and figure out a way down.
Not gonna happen. You know what? He'll be patient. He'll head back to his spot.
His spot?
Be patient.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. We're gonna come back to you. Ryan, you get a text message now that Chloe is following you from Frankfurt. It looks like a picture of a piece of paper with some names on it. You do recognize Stoltz at the top there. You don't recognize any of the other names, but Amber Aguilar is bolded. Addresses are there, and it looks like the duration of use of something in the third spreadsheet column. Duration, it looks like it's in days. All of them seem similar, 60 to 90 days or so. And he also sends you a follow-up text with those two names, Stoltz and Amber Aguilar.
I am not going to do anything with that information right now.
Yeah, you continue driving and make your way to the Motel 6, which you pull into.
Yeah, on my way to the motel when we're pretty close, I'm going to just kind of check in with Tiberius. I know that this has all been, and I'll say it, Tiberius, I know this is a lot, this is a surprise, but I told you I was on your side. Look, Prentice is okay, he's great, right?
Never been better, Prentice says from the backy back.
He's got a hole in his chest. What do you mean?
I know it looks really awful, but I don't feel it. I promise you, it doesn't hurt. And I look, I feel so good right now. I feel I'm alive.
He feels better than he's ever felt in his entire existence.
I'm sure he does.
We have a mission to do, and we gotta do it.
We're on the same side, Tiberius.
Let's get inside.
All right.
As soon as Tiberius gets inside the hotel, he's going to go into the bathroom and lock it behind him.
Okay.
Well, hold on.
give me just a moment. I have a little...
What's going on, Chris?
I have a little homework to do. So just give me a second, please. All right.
I'm just so excited for Ryan. He finally is achieving his goal after, what, a year and a half
now? I'm Voldemorting.
Finally fucking doing it.
As you drive into the Motel 6 parking lot, your keys are being held at the front desk, and go ahead and park the vehicle. Ryan, go ahead and roll your luck, please.
I succeeded.
You go ahead and catch a glimpse of yourself before you exit the vehicle in the rear view mirror, in the side view mirror. And you can see that the prosthetic is like barely hanging on by a thread. Honestly, it looks pretty messed up.
I do what I can to kind of...
You're going to have to hold it in place for now. That looks okay. It just looks like you're like holding your nose, like you've got a cold or something.
Okay, that's fine. Now go get the keys.
So you leave the vehicle. Prentice is left behind in the back seat with Tiberius trying to not look over at him. But that is a scene that we're going to have to deal with. So Prentice, you're back there now alone with Tiberius and vice versa. Tiberius, you're alone with Prentice.
I know it's weird, Tiberius, but Ryan helped me. And like I said, we have a mission we still need to finish.
He made you something that we hunt down.
I don't feel like I'm something that we hunt down. I would be the first to tell you if I was, so...
I don't think leadership's really gonna go for that.
That's fine, Tiberius, if you want to report this to leadership, but can we please stick to the mission? You can tell leadership all you have to. I understand. Let's just get it done.
Why do you even care?
What's that?
Why do you even care?
Why do I even care about the mission?
Yeah.
Because I've always cared about the mission?
That's not a reason.
How is that not a reason?
That's just is. Just because you've been doing it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're saying, what's my core value behind all of this? Why am I a part of the group?
No. Why you give a shit? You just came back from the dead. You're right. A monstrosity. What?
I wouldn't call myself a monstrosity, but whatever. Look, you and I both know there are things in this world that we can't explain, and I'll be the first to admit, I would love to know the medical underpinnings of how this happened, but we don't have time right now, and we've got to get shit done, dude.
Because
that's our job.
It's not my job anymore.
The door opens, and Ryan's holding two key cards. He motions for you two to disembark and let you know you'll be in room 7 on the bottom floor. This is a horseshoe-shaped motel, so you're kind of parked in the center of the rooms that are all facing the parking lot.
Prentice is going to cover his head and give a knowing look to Ryan, like a, oh boy, kind of look, and then gesture at Tiberius.
You all right, Tiberius?
I'm alive, Anna.
Yes. And
isn't it wonderful?
A woman who you feel like you've known all your life, Prentice, comes up behind you and hugs you from behind, squealing. And she turns you around and hugs you from the front again and holds you and looks at you and smiles. For a moment, this is just, it's like meeting a sister you never had. You grew up together so close. It's been years and you finally come back together. As she smiles, the sun cascades across her face and she winces and kind of laughs to herself and brings her face back down and covers it with a gloved hand a bit, trying to shade it. She goes, we should get inside the building. What's your name?
Prentice.
No. What's your name? I'm Chloe. I'm
not used to this. Let's get inside first.
She nods.
Eric, do you remember your character's name?
Fuck, I don't.
Everett Hampson. Everett Hampson.
You're stalling for
Everett Hampson.
Yes, that's right. It's been so long.
Mr. Malik, I'm so happy, but we should get inside quickly. It's still too bright outside.
Yeah, let's get inside. Ryan is absolutely beaming at Chloe and Everett meeting, just overwhelmed with excitement for what's to come. Let's go.
You,
Everett,
hurry towards...
Grab the cooler from the trunk.
Okay. And Prentice grabs it.
You first feel within your chest like you've just been given a task that is honestly, you're not worthy of it. And the fact that Ryan has immediately chosen you for this, you've just never felt so special. It's honestly like... It feels strange. You care about this so much, and you would have never thought in 1,000 years that you would be the one to carry this.
Nice.
Your narration on this is very creepy, Chris. Well done.
You are all now inside the motel room. Tiberius, you said you're going to walk straight into the bathroom and lock the door. Is that correct?
Yes.
Chloe, as you do so, says, hi, I'm Chloe. It's nice to meet you. And as you slam the door on her.
Yes. Slam the door, lock it. Is there a window in this room?
Yes, there is a small window. It's fittable. One can get through it. It has been painted over, though.
Okay. I'm going to put the toilet seat down, sit down, and look at my phone.
Well, he's there. He's awake and he's still shaking his head. He looks so frightened and he's mouthing the word no over and over again.
I'm texting you, sending you a message right now, Chris.
Sure. Do we need to go offline or?
No. I think. Well, let's just see after I send it.
Mm-hmm. As you're doing this, Chloe turns to Ryan and Prentice. She says, "Is he okay?"
He'll come around.
Well, if you think so, I think he might be a little weirded out, and I think he might see us as a problem.
Yeah, but he'll come around one way or another. I think that sometimes people don't understand what they don't know, and we need to make them understand. Let's get him out of the bathroom.
Okay.
Okay. Chloe goes straight to the bathroom, and Prentice, I assume you follow suit.
Mm-hmm.
Tiberius.
Hey, bud.
Will you please open the door?
Leave me alone.
Tiberius, you're being real grumpy in there.
Tiberius, I'm going to have to open the door now.
I'm going to throw my phone to the ground and stomp on it until there's nothing left.
Oh, my. She goes ahead and she puts her hand on the doorknob and turns it. And you hear this mechanical cracking and crunching sound as metal scrapes against metal very slowly. Tiberius, and you look up at the sound as you watch the doorknob turn and part of the frame, the wooden frame, begin to crack. You can see the cracks appear even on this side of the bathroom.
It's a firm grip you got there, lady.
Tiberius will grab the lid of the toilet, like the, what is that called?
Yeah, it's the toilet tank lid.
It's the lid of the toilet tank, like the tank, itself.
Yes.
The tank lid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and break the window. And try to clear glass. And then also yell, "Just give me a minute. I got a real bad stomach ache."
All right. You go ahead and smash this through the window. And the painted window, the shards of glass and paint explode outward as you clear the shards. Chloe looks up at you, Prentice, in your eyes. And her demeanor goes from soft to urgent.
Mm-hmm.
And she then very quickly turns the rest of the handle as the frame continues to crack and break and the door flies open.
Ryan is going to shout, "We need him, Chloe."
What you see, Prentice, is Tiberius halfway through the window, trying to scramble through this tiny, tiny window onto the other side of the motel.
I'm going to run for his legs.
Chloe, unable to... Actually, let me roll. Chloe, unable to run past you in time as you reacted faster, turns to Ryan. She nods. She begins running for the front door of the hotel room instead.
Prentice is going to grab his ankles if he can.
Are going to roll an unarmed minus 20%.
Try not to succeed.
I must succeed. Wow.
That's the tip.
It's a failure, but it was so close. 24 of 20.
Oh, damn. Dang.
You grab on to his flailing legs that are trying to get the rest of his body, his hips, through this very small window. And Tiberius, you feel someone grab your legs. You're looking down at what looks like a prickly bush that's 4 to 6 feet below you. This is a fairly high window on this side. It looks like the grade on this side of the building is fairly low. You feel somebody grabbing you.
I will try to continue.
Go ahead and roll your unarmed combat, please. It's a plus 20%.
With the plus, I succeed.
You kick as hard as you can. There's really no missing because you can feel this person grabbing onto you. And you knock him off, or her off, of your legs. And that gives you enough momentum to force yourself the rest through the window and onto the ground. Roll your athletics or dexterity, whichever is higher.
Critical failure.
And you slam your face against the ground. Everything goes black and starry for just a moment. When you come to, you're slowly standing up and you look back up towards the broken window and you see Prentice's face looking down at you. Prentice, would you like to describe your face?
Joyous. Joyously looking down at him. Stay there. Just stay there, okay? We're not gonna hurt you. Let us help you.
Because of that critical failure, I need a luck roll now, Tiberius.
It's always the same place, and I never remember where it is.
Holy shit.
What?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
He's still in the game, baby.
Chris is like, does not compute.
So I still prescribe to the old Call of Cthulhu rules for the one on a luck. I just do. I know it's not kosher for Delta Green, but
it's
I keep it around as a house rule. How did this happen again? It so rarely occurs that it's just like, what? Roll your sanity, dude.
Wait, remind me the house rule, Chris.
You actually benefited from it last time.
I know, I don't remember.
So
it's not actually sanity, it's power times five, but you still succeeded on both. I just recalled that. But you succeeded. So that means we don't go any further on this little magical potential power addition track. That's from the old COC rules. You would have needed to fail in order to have a chance to increase your power.
Oh, I got it.
But still, great roll. Fantastic roll. You look up at Prentice beaming down at you, and it's as if your legs have a mind of their own. You've never sprinted like this before. And going down this steep side of a hill, rocky outcroppings all around you, it's not secure footing. But you sprint down it like it's flat scrubland. For a moment, you turn, and you can see rounding the farthest corner of the motel, a similarly sprinting woman with a hoodie drawn tight, dark sunglasses, gloved hands, in hot pursuit.
Surprise, dreamer. Oh, don't pretend as if you expected to see me here after observing all that's happened. You're better than that. Such performance does not become you. I can clearly see that it startles you to find that I walk across the boundaries so freely. Now, as an aside, I certainly am curious about the things your mind chooses to selectively store or dispose of about me. But the inner workings of your consciousness aside, I can see the questions written plainly across your face. Where, oh where, is the fuzzy, incongruous voice of that being that now calls itself Jeff? Where is that grizzled veteran, the maimed relic? Well, there is a pattern to storytelling, dreamer. One that we will respect. This, dear one, is the moment we must engage a measure of exposition. Incorporating a small reveal, I think, will greatly intrigue. The weaving of such necessary soliloquy will continue to push forward these events to a predestined conclusion, one that I have heavily invested in by retaining your services. Those we devotedly eavesdrop upon as they frolic about these wild lands, they search for a power to give them an edge over their enemy. But what could it be? What draws forward relic like an unerring lodestone? Why, could it be? Could it be me? Voila, dear dreamer. It is me they seek. But why, you ask? Why would I insert myself as a lofty MacGuffin in our tale? Because I'm powerful, dreamer. My existence has gravity. Even when a story does not directly concern me. You've already felt my pull from the pages of books you've read, from the cinema you allowed to flash across your optical senses. You and I are, as I've said, very old friends. That is why I'm always so hurt you are slow to trust me. I believe you know me extremely well, and you feel that in your very dreamy bones, but not your very rigid mind. I think that scares you. So another reminder on top of another reminder, dreamer. I mean you no harm. I actually don't intend relic harm either, if that worries you. He is but a lost little man thing, blindly led forward by his nose. Though he is not as interesting as you are, dear. You're a little more clued in, aren't you? A little more weary? A great deal wiser. For sure. It wouldn't be the worst thing if a few more challenges fell across Relic's path, would it? But the thing calling itself Jeff, on the other hand, he really doesn't belong here, does he? This place isn't forged for his kind. Like a living biological system, a place like this will eventually show its displeasure toward an invading foreign body, sooner or later. Jeff's prideful insistence on holding Relic's hand through this ordeal will cost him perhaps more than he may be willing to pay. there's always a price, but not necessarily the funds to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, stop fretting, Dreamer. Actions have consequences, or so it seems. Your Jeff has meddled far too long in the affairs of this domain. It's not his place. But as a gesture to you, I will simply let him know that. But in my way. Oh, I see you're still getting distressed. I can sense your anxiety. Well, if you're so attached to this fleeting entity's final moments, let me give you another token of good faith. But you must agree to remain by my side for whatever comes next. Oh, you agree? Well then. Thank you for listening to Sorry Honey, I Have to Take This. The podcast you have heard is broadcasted in many places. And while you take in the unfolding events of its production, many other entities listen as well. They listen to you listening, as the things such a broadcast does to your mind ripple out into certain spheres. Those fluctuations can be fascinating. So when I say thank you, understand it is on behalf of a greater community that you unknowingly enrich. I implore you, go speak with those who curate these events. They are reachable through Discord. The link to that server is readily available for any who seek it. Take the show notes, for example. That is one such place. And like all things, existential perpetuation needs energy. In this particular case, the symbol of such energy is currency. Go to coffee.com/sorryhoney and contribute. ko-fi.com. The things in your head translated to the workings of your limbs, translated to the exchange of your energy for currency, translated to the exchange of your currency for their energy. Beautiful, isn't it? Perpetuated at coffee.com/sorryhoney and be a part of it. Thank you again for all your support. You have made things so very interesting.
What is this? How peculiar.
There, Dreamer. See, I've sustained your Jeff so he can be with you just a bit longer. So now, you must stay and listen. And perhaps this time you will remember. We are now together until we are done.